You know ID in the D in the L O A. ID in the D in the F E A. You know ID in the D in the L O A. ID in the D in the F E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Podcast. I'm your co-host Kevin Belton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino, and that is right! WNBA basketball is back, folks! And so are Peltoncast emergency pods. The Storm with a dominating victory today over the New York Liberty. Kevin, thoughts?
Well, we're going to have some content coming around Sue Bird making her return to the court, her triumphant return to the court today. So you look forward to that in particular, as you, the listener. Brianna Stewart looked great. Ezzie Megbogor, we are going to start some hype about her. I'm very excited to do that. But alas, that is not what we're going to talk about right now. Because the Seattle Seahawks have stolen the headlines by trading all of their draft picks for Jamal Adams.
Fuck me.
Is that your analysis?
The end analysis. It's not just all their draft picks. It's also Bradley McDougal, which obviously doesn't have a ton of value with Jamal Adams here, but it's like Bradley McDougal is still a good football player.
Yes, you do have to consider that as part of the equation. A little bit, you know, a little different because they were going to waive Max Unger, but with, like, when they included him in that trade for Jimmy Graham. All right, let's go over the package here. It is a first-round pick for the Seahawks in 2021. A third-round pick from the Seahawks in 2021. A first-round pick for the Seahawks in 2022. And as you mentioned, McDougal heading to the New York Jets for Jamal Adams. And a fourth-round pick in 2022. Would you like to go over the trade value of these picks combined?
Oh, my God.
I put together a spreadsheet to do this during the draft this year, and that came in useful here. So I projected, I looked at the ESPN Football Power Index projections for the Seahawks. They had them on average picking 20th. I said Jamal Adams will move it down a little bit. So let's say 22nd pick this year. And then I went with the 20th pick in 2022. And then if you follow out, the 22nd pick would then be the 86th pick in this third round on average. And then I gave the Jets pick in 2022 in the fourth round the 115th pick. No discounting for future value of picks because really that shouldn't actually exist. You should be able to exploit that. So if you take those picks at all their value now, the difference between them and the Jimmy Johnson trade chart is equivalent to the fifth pick in the draft, which is about where Jamal Adams was taken, although that was at the start of his rookie contract, which he's nearing the end of. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you go by the Chase Stewart value chart that better reflects the performance teams actually see in relative to their contracts, the difference between what the Seahawks gave up in this trade, again, not including Bradley McDougal, and what they gave back is equivalent to between the first and second pick in the draft. They basically traded for a quarterback.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was so curious where you were going with that pick between the first and second pick of the draft. I was like, is there something beyond the first pick that we don't know about?
It is not quite that high. So that's a lot to give up. Have you been stunned into silence?
It's a lot to give up, but it's also a lot to give up given the circumstances. So you mentioned that we'd talk about the contract. If you're giving that up for the first pick in the draft or for the fifth pick in the draft or whatever, you still have that player under the rookie salary scale, which Jamal Adams is not, and Jamal Adams is about to be paid. The other aspect of this is, for all intents and purposes, the NFL salary cap is most likely going to be going down over the future. We'll see what this means for negotiations with Jamal Adams, or it'll at least be static.
Right.
But the idea of committing in this very moment to not having draft capital in the years where draft capital could be the most valuable it has ever been in possibly the history of the draft. The Seahawks have gone out in two of those years and said, we're going to limit our draft capital severely to pay somebody who's most likely going to be negotiating the salary in an uncertain time, but still taking into account some of the past capital that you would look at instead of the way that the world is going to look in, say, 2021, 2022.
Yeah, there's already been discussion, some reporting about the possibility of the NFL smoothing the salary cap in future years, much as we've talked about with the NBA, as they considered doing but were unable to agree on the Players Association with in 2016 when the new TV deal kicked in. The idea being that it would not drop off in 2021, given that revenues are going to be down this year with, you know, at the very best, limited fans available in some markets. We talked about this last week. Your idea that the NFL was not going to have fans anywhere if they couldn't have fans somewhere has already aged poorly, I would say.
I just didn't even factor in Texas.
This is not much better than you. Not even Texas. Like, I saw some reports about Indianapolis. They're planning to play. I mean, they're already playing USL games there with fans, as we mentioned on the pod.
Sorry, I didn't factor in Republican governors.
Well, but also not aging about as well as your take that the Seahawks were going to trade for Jamal Adams because they were set at safety. Anyways, so it wouldn't necessarily be a dramatic drop off in 2021, but perhaps not the increase that I think people were expecting, especially with new TV deals coming in at some point. It would probably be a more static salary cap over the next, you know, maybe three seasons here because of that smoothing. So let's talk about Jamal Adams' contract.
Okay.
So the Seahawks do get one really cheap year of Jamal Adams out of this trade. Only his base salary counts towards the Seahawks cap, and in the last year of his rookie contract, that base salary is $825,000. So they're actually saving money, you know, as compared to had they kept Bradley McDougald on the roster. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, they do with that, if they end up spending that on pass rush, or if they're just going to try to carry that over to future seasons because of this issue that you talked about.
What would happen if they were to work out a deal with Jamal Adams this year? Could they spread that out over this time period?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it really matters either way because you can carry over, but that's one possible option. So McDougald was due $3.6 million in base salary, so they've saved not quite $2.8 million, basically. They still are on the hook for the $1.3 million prorated bonus that McDougald had when he first signed here.
Okay.
Or not first signed here, I guess when he re-signed here because he first signed on a one-year deal. All right, so then in 2021, the fifth and final year of Adams' rookie contract, he's got a $9.86 million salary that was originally a team option. The Jets had already picked that up. That is guaranteed for injury and will fully vest next March.
Okay.
So traditionally, I think when the Rams have been an exception, they've tended to renegotiate a lot of their star players' contracts at this point when they still had 2 years left on their rookie deals. I think that happened with Jared Goff, if I remember it correctly. Todd Gurley would be another example of that. Maybe even Brandon Cooks when they first acquired him.
Uh-huh.
As you can tell, it's gone very well for the Rams when they made these decisions. Yeah. That's definitely something you would look to emulate. Most teams, I think, renegotiate going into that option year of the player's rookie contract.
Okay, so we should expect this next season.
I think so, because it becomes a little bit easier to manage it. First off, like, you're not adding a ton to your cap because of the fact that he's already got that fully guaranteed base salary. So what are we looking at in terms of a Jamal Adams contract going extension? I think a couple of comps that his side is going to point to. Eddie Jackson, who signed a 4-year extension in January that added $58 million to his contract, including $22 million guaranteed at the time of signing and an effective $33 million guaranteed. And then Landon Collins last year when he signed with Washington in a 6-year deal worth up to $84 million with $31 million fully guaranteed and $44.5 million effective guaranteed, all of that per overthecap.com. So, I mean, to stay on that for a second, I think that if it was in a world where there wasn't this downturn financially due to the pandemic, I think a starting point would be $15
million. Yes.
Now, I still think you probably end up in that range, but, you know, maybe there's a little more wiggle room. Now, the one interesting thing is these safety contracts, as I noted, have been not tremendously guaranteed. If you were willing to guarantee him a higher portion, maybe you get him at a slightly lower amount per year. That could be an interesting option for the Seahawks to consider, given that, you know, he's relatively young.
What about Jamal Adams, the player?
All right, Jamal Adams, the player. So we talked a couple weeks ago about how the Seahawks didn't have very many top 10 players as ESPN was going through and doing their top 10 position rankings for this season. My ESPN colleague, Jeremy Fowler. Jamal Adams was number one at safety.
There we go.
And the lowest ranking he got from any of the voters that they canvassed for this ranking was number five at safety. Some of the commentary here, he's the second best defensive player in football, said an NFC executive, placing Adams behind Aaron Donald in the pantheon. He was pushed by Vikings safety Harrison Smith for number one until pulling away. Superb athlete, tough, intelligent, a separate NFL exec said, or NFC exec said, one of these is probably John Schneider, right? He's so competitive and physical, and it's not like with some other players with similar styles where you wouldn't play them from depth. You can play Jamal from depth. That is one interesting question about how the Seahawks are going to use him, because he hasn't been traditionally that like Earl Thomas-style deep safety. Another NFL coordinator said he can cover but wants to make the big hit all the time. The scheme would matter for him. So presumably he's more in that Cam Chancellor role inside the box with Quandre Diggs is the deep safety.
Okay, and what type of value is it? Let's say that you have the best safety in the game. How much better is it? How much worse is it to have the best safety in the game than it is to have the best pass rusher in the game?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, the evidence has been that coverage has pointed to, you know, I think PFF has studied this, and perhaps my colleagues at ESPN Stats and Info have done some work on this, that coverage does tend to be more important defensively than pass rush, which is, yeah, essentially, you know, we'll see what the Seahawks do with this money that they still have left over, if that allows them to increase their offer to Jadeveon Clowney, or if he doesn't get a better offer, or if they eventually go after Everson Griffin. But at this point, I think you're hoping that the improved coverage makes up for the
interesting
pass rush not being good.
Why then do pass rushers tend to get paid more than coverage players?
They have stats that are easier for people to digest, probably.
Okay, so what about Jamal Adams statistically? When you look at the more advanced stats that you can within football, does this also bear out that he's one of the best defensive players in the game?
I don't know that I have looked at those.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have PFF to get full details there. I think they're a little down on his coverage. I mean, one thing that stands out is the fact that from the safety position, he has 12 sacks over his three seasons in the NFL, including 6.5 last year. Wait a second. I need to go to check this out. Where would would that have led the Seahawks last season? I'm pretty sure it would have.
It also, though, you saying that kind of is a red flag for me with these people who are judging it, which is like, okay, he's a safety who has counting stats all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the only reason. Yeah, that would have comfortably led the Seahawks. Rasheem Green was last year's team leader with 4 sacks.
Okay, so then ultimately, how much better is the Seahawks secondary? If you,
I'm not an expert in Jamal Adams. People think it's a lot better. I mean, again, Jordy is the number one safety in the league according to this panel. Someone called him the number two defensive player overall. I mean, I think it's definitely better, especially if you're thinking of him in that box safety role, probably.
Getting a little bit hyped on it.
Well, I mean, look, I think this is the most Seahawks trade ever. There have been some very Seahawks trades before. Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham, etc. The list is long. This may be the most Seahawks trade in terms of, like, number one, we are willing to pay whatever it takes to get star talent, which is something that, again, to go back to that lack of top 10 players, they had Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, number two at their respective, number two Wilson at quarterback. Wagner, I believe, was the number one linebacker. Those were the only top 10 players they had in any position. So, you know, they needed to go out and add star talent, and they were willing to pay whatever it takes. And also in terms of, like, you know, we're willing to trade our draft picks. We're willing to be aggressive towards winning now if that's what it takes.
Well, and that's really what they have to be viewing the season as. And so I guess a couple of thoughts in general. Number one, I wonder what's going to happen with somebody like Marquise Blair. It's always good to have depth at safety. We've seen year after year after year safeties injured throughout. Right. But you look at the secondary and you do say this could be when you have Griffin, Diggs, Adams, Trey Flowers, who emerged last year, I feel like you've got a pretty solid secondary there. Probably one of at least top 10 secondary in the league, maybe even considerably better than that. Nickel corner is obviously a question mark, and whether it's going to be Ugo Amadi or Marquise Blair possibly involved in that position, I truly wonder what that's going to look like. I don't want Blair to get lost in the mix because I have a lot of excitement about him as a player, but this does say possibly this is one of the best secondaries in the league. We know that the linebacking core is both quite good and incredibly deep. Defensive line is the one place where the Seahawks could be the worst defensive line in the entire league. So the question for me is, what does this mean now? Does this trade, is there a kicker after this? Is this just they went out and traded for Jamal Adams? Or did they go out and trade for Jamal Adams and are planning on, you know, one of these other moves, Clowney, Griffin, somebody like that? Because we need more Griffins on the team.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility here. And, you know, it's probably going to come together pretty quickly because, you know, now that the NFL and the Players Association have a deal for training camp.
Because we're fucking doing this.
Players are reporting to markets next week. I mean, I don't think they'll be in facilities for until next Sunday. So still a week away, more than a week away from that, if I recall the timeline correctly. But this is happening. So Clowney's going to have to make a decision. And whatever other offers are out there for him, they haven't been enough to convince him to sign yet. I'm not sure what's changing now, except I guess the fact that potentially at some point he could take a physical.
The conversation had to have been before they pulled the trigger on this trade is they had to have a conversation with these defensive linemen beforehand and be like, here is the position that we're going to be in. What does this look like for you? So if it does mean that Clowney comes back, like really to make this trade, you have to think that the Seahawks are good enough to win the Super Bowl within the next two seasons.
Yeah.
And that's really the only reason to do it. If they do that, then fuck it. Do it, right? Like, if you actually think that this team is good enough to unseat sort of the powers of the NFL that they are, I'm not convinced of that, of this team, if they do bring in somebody like Clowney. You look at it top to bottom, and it is a very good NFL football team. You have one of the best quarterbacks, a good defense. They're in the echelon with the Ravens, the Chiefs, the 49ers, teams like that.
This is interesting. Jamal Adams, in terms of yards allowed per target last season, was number 8 among qualifying players, according to Pro Football Reference's advanced tracking, at 4.9 yards allowed per target, right behind Earl Thomas, who was 6th at 4.5.
Which is good. Okay, so then the question mark side of it, right? So there's the hype side of it, of like, okay, this is going to be a fun team to watch no matter what, as the Seahawks almost always are. They have the most important piece that you could have in Russell Wilson on a roster. They have a defense that could potentially be coming together. The rest of the offense seems in fairly solid shape, especially with Wilson leading them. Does this push them from the second tier where they were for the last couple of years to that first tier? Possibly. But possibly, on the flip side of it, the questions that have to be asked and the place that upsets me with a team building perspective is, why not just pay Earl a season ago? Why not make moves differently instead of waiting until you have to give up 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick and Bradley McDougal to go get elite talent? Elite talent was right there that you could have extended.
But was it though? Because
the reason Earl Thomas was upset with the organization was because they weren't willing to extend him. Granted, he's possibly been. But also, where's Richard Sherman ranked on this list? Like, these players have already been in the system, and the Seahawks have been unwilling to pay them without having to give up the draft picks. It is not the proper way to assemble a team to just be looking at blue chip players and trading draft picks for them. You already developed these players through your system.
Neither of those players made the top 10.
Earl Thomas? You said he was right behind Earl Thomas.
That was in the yards per target allowed. He did not make the top 10.
Of what?
Of safeties.
From the ESPN list?
Yeah.
Who cares? I'm A, shocked. I mean, I saw the Madden rankings, and Richard Sherman is like top 3. I'm pretty surprised that.
But, I mean, the other thing, difference between this is, like, Earl Thomas is 31. Jamal Adams is 25. The Seahawks are locking up, you know, when they extend him, as they inevitably will.
Do you know how you continue to get good talent, though? Is by drafting players and having draft capital and rebuilding it that way. And that's, to me, the other piece of it that's upsetting is people being like, the Seahawks are shitty at drafting in the first round anyway. It's like, great, that is true. The first picks that the team has made for the last two seasons, not including this year, have been players who have not exceeded their contract value so far. It's about the capital, though. It's about taking it and being able to flip these players or these picks for more draft picks down the road. And that's what the Seahawks are good at. The Seahawks aren't good at making an individual draft pick. The Seahawks are good at having a lot of draft capital and ending up with some good players.
Making a lot of draft picks. Because no, the thing is, even though the Seahawks use their first-round picks in frustrating fashion, the evidence is strong, extremely strong, that there is no such thing as draftability. At least, maybe there is such a thing as draftability, but you can't tell from teams making 7 to 10 draft picks per year. You'd need like dozens of draft picks per year to be able to figure out which teams are actually good at drafting and which teams aren't. So that's why you just want to accumulate draft picks. And yeah, that is the big downside here, is even if the Seahawks were going to trade down from whatever that pick might have been, then they would have added additional picks in the third and fourth round. And now they've given up a third rounder.
They didn't trade 3 picks. They traded like 8 picks.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So that to me is the most frustrating piece. But granted, like I said, if this team is actually at the point, and if we're actually convinced that they're at the place that they are going to compete for a Super Bowl within these next 2 years, all right, great, let's do it. You know, we'll probably be able to figure it out around Russell Wilson after that anyway.
I mean, you know, I think the case for it is, look, Russell isn't getting any younger, and while quarterback is a position where players age relatively well, like, this is now is the time to try to maximize and put a quality defense around him and win now while he's in his early 30s rather than trying to do it when he's in his mid to late 30s. Yes. The case against it is part of the way you do that is by having quality depth. And, you know, the Seahawks are taking more, I would say, of a relatively, like, you know, when the Falcons traded up for Julio Jones and traded a bunch of draft capital in that draft. And they had these teams that were extremely top heavy with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and some other, you know, playmakers. But then whenever anybody got hurt on defense, they just had a complete drop off and were terrible in those seasons. I don't think it's going to be that extreme for the Seahawks because they are good at developing depth from late round picks. But
also, Pete Carroll is going to be like 80 years old when this is happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about...
We really can't even project that. But there have been cases over the last decade. You know, we think of Drew Brees as a winning quarterback, but they spent a period of time being a team out of the playoffs. The Falcons are currently in that time period. The Chargers with Phil Rivers. It's like there have been time periods that good quarterbacks had extended periods where they were out of the playoffs because of the rest of the talent on the team wasn't as good. I think Russell Wilson is a better quarterback than somebody like Phil Rivers. I don't know if I can just blanket say that he's a better quarterback than Drew Brees, though.
No, I don't think you can say that when they're in their primes. Well, so it's certainly going to be something interesting to watch, and we're not going to see it on the field until, what is it, September 13th? Is that the season opener?
What? It's fun for stuff to happen. Screw it. It's not our money. They're not our draft picks. Like, let's just hope Jamal Adams is fun, because all the comments have been, Jamal Adams is so exciting. Jamal Adams is fun. That's what really matters. If that's the case, then I'm all in. Because the times that this has happened in the past, Percy Harvin wasn't that fun. Jimmy Graham wasn't that fun. I'm sorry, but they weren't. When you think of those two players, do you think of, like, whoa, what exciting times? Like,
what do I think of Percy Harvin returning a kickoff for a touchdown in the fucking Super Bowl that the Seahawks won?
Game was
I think that was pretty fun.
Okay, yes, this one play was fun, but like,
do I think when they actually figured out how to pass the ball to Jimmy Graham in the red zone that was fun? Yeah, I think so.
there were moments with each of them, but they were few and far between. They ended up being mostly frustrating, because when you have expectations like this, it's really hard to meet those expectations. I think Jamal Adams is probably a better player than either of those two were, and is more in his prime than either of those two players were, and seems to be less injured. I'll say that. So, like, if they are...
I mean, Percy Harvin was pretty young, I think, but he did get, you know... He had a skill set that was not destined to age well when he started to deal with the injuries.
When really football even kind of changed around him, too. But Jamal Adams is probably a better player than either of those two were in his prime. So he probably will be exciting. And, you know, they didn't make this trade last year with Minka Fitzpatrick, which seemed to work out for the Steelers quite well. They did it now. They had to give up more draft capital, but I think the consensus seems to be that Jamal Adams is a better player, and they may have added the best safety in the game.
Well, there you go. On that note, thanks for listening.